I think everyone has a unique voice. And I think if it's authentic to you, it'll always have a different take on it. The moment that you try to emulate someone else, and I think we all start there. We find somebody that we like and we start to emulate them a little bit. But eventually, if you're true to who you are, you're going to have a different path and a different turn and something that resonates with people.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Darren Voros' diverse skill set has taken him to many stages around the world. He has been featured as an on-air renovation expert on The Goods on CBC and Cityline on City TV. And Darren was also the behind-the-scenes contractor on Save My Reno on HGTV and Game of Homes on the W Network. He's an accomplished real estate investor, trainer, and coach. He controls a portfolio of properties worth just over $20 million and has traveled across the U.S. and North America, educating, inspiring, and motivating audiences on the subject of real estate investing. His willingness to give back prompted him to launch his YouTube channel in 2020 in order to have a wider reach in educating investors. Darren, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks so much for having me on. Appreciate it.
The pleasure's mine. Tell us two things. Where are you based out of? And what's been the highlight of your day?
I'm based out of Toronto, Ontario, which is, of course, in Canada, your neighbors to the north. And the highlight of my day is I just had a lunch with some business partners of mine looking at a $300 million development right here in Toronto. So that was a pretty cool way to have a lunch.
Those are great lunches to have. I look forward to circling back on that conversation because that's something I want to hear more about is how did you position yourself to get there? But there are three questions I ask every person who comes on the show. Where did you start? Where are you now? And quickly, how did you get there?
Yeah, I started about 19 years ago, 2002. I worked over in Japan for a year. My previous life was musical theater. And I worked over at Universal Studios in Osaka, Japan. And for that year, I didn't have a lot of expenses. And I saved up a little bit of money. I came back home at the end of that year and I didn't know what to do with that money. And I thought, well, I've heard that buying real estate is not a bad investment. And so I did that. And, you know, didn't have a great experience out of the gate, but, you know, just kind of held that property for a few years, rented it out. At the end of that 4-year period that I had it, I sold it for double what I paid for it. And I went and bought 3 properties after that within about a 6-month period. And that was when I got excited about that, you know, exponential growth in the real estate investing portfolio. And, you know, since then I've done quite a few different kinds of things, mostly in the renovation space and conversions and duplexes and triplexes and fourplexes. Now we're getting into a lot more larger projects. We do 8 unit conversions and all kinds of stuff in Toronto. And we're doing purpose-built developments now, 33, 44, 200 units, that kind of thing is our bread and butter now.
Wow. So you're more on the GC side of things than you are on the active ownership side. Is that right?
I've done both, you know, like I was in there literally swinging the hammer for a couple of years and, you know, I loved it. I think renovation is such a cool space to be in. It's one of the most gratifying jobs I've ever had in my life. You start the day with something and you finish the day with something else if all goes well. But I just think you can't scale a business that way, you know, and so I had to step back in order to be able to really build. And since doing that is when I've gotten into bigger projects and more partnerships and growing the portfolio significantly from there.
Right, right. So just to get a quick snapshot on your business today, are you still on the general contractor side of things or is it more on the active ownership side?
No, I'm more on the active ownership side. So now we have a construction manager that deals with most of our projects and all of our development projects are a little bit bigger than I would even manage. And so we're hiring project managers and builders that are, you know, in that space of doing these, you know, 10, 12, $15 million builds. It's definitely over my head when it comes to being a GC.
Right, right. No, that's fantastic. What was that transition like from going from, like you said, the active, you know, guy swinging the hammer to then maybe running the company and then going into the active side on the ownership side of the business?
It was a hard transition, I would say. You know, I grew up in a, you know, middle class sort of family that we were kind of taught that, you know, in order to get something in life, you kind of have to work for it. And it's something that I still struggle with today is that mindset, I think mostly of that you don't have to do everything. You know, you let people do what they do best. And if I'm the visionary of the company, I have to be free to make those decisions and to be able to sit back and look at where I want to go. But if I'm bogged down by the day-to-day tasks, it's nearly impossible to have that opportunity to really continually grow and expand.
How have you freed yourself from those daily entanglements of being bogged down by the minutia?
I'm sure you've either heard of it or read the book, Who Not How. Mm-hmm. It was a transformational thing for me, just saying like, there's got to be somebody out there that knows how to do this. And they probably know how to do it better than me. And it's just a matter of what is the cost of that? Does it make sense in your business right now? And then, you know, when do you start to implement that? So simple things like bookkeeping and social media management and my YouTube channel manager, all that stuff could be sourced out. And the thing that was often holding me back is, well, no one knows how to do it as good as I can do it or whatever, which is complete bull, right? It's just that you're not hiring the right people or you're not paying them enough money. And if you can find those two things, you can definitely pass those things off to people and really sit in your level of expertise where you should be and not getting bogged down by the day-to-day operations.
Yeah, that's for sure. Talk to us about your YouTube channel. I know in your bio here, it says that you launched that really in 2020, but it sounds like that's something that you've poured a lot of time and effort into.
Yeah, I think there was a little bit of a niche missing in the YouTube space, and I wanted to kind of go after that. And that was education around real estate investing specifically and bite-sized content that was hard-hitting, 8 to 10 minutes, heavy on the content side. And that's what my channel does. I think that I spent a lot of time in the beginning really getting the model ironed out. And I was doing everything from the start. And now I'm hitting my stride. I mean, I'm not like massive or anything. I have 7,500 subscribers, but in a year and a half, that's pretty good growth for a YouTube channel. And that's been all organic. And I really get a lot of feedback now. And, you know, when I'm raising capital and I'm putting together development projects, most of the people that I talk to now, and this is why I'm such a huge fan of the idea of going out and being a content creator, because it really does give you an edge in the space. If people have heard your podcast or they've seen you or your YouTube channel or they've seen you on Instagram, it just gives them that level of familiarity. And it eliminates a lot of those initial conversations of, hey, what do you do? What's going on? People meet me and they feel like they know me a little bit. And that's been a huge boost to my business.
One of the things that I commonly hear people struggle with is, well, it's already been written about. They'll say that, or somebody else has already talked about it. That'll be another line. Or the other thing maybe is, I don't know what to talk about. How do you overcome those?
I think everyone has a unique voice. And I think if it's authentic to you, it'll always have a different take on it. The moment that you try to emulate someone else, and I think we all start there. We find somebody that we like and we start to emulate them a little bit. But eventually, if you're true to who you are, you're going to have a different path and a different turn and something that resonates with people. So I had the same thoughts too. Like, I'm not really telling anybody anything that they don't or haven't already heard before, but it's in how I tell it that somebody may hear it a different way. And so I think that's where you just have to get over that and start creating your content, and you'll get initial feedback of what people like and don't like about your thing. And then you can just expand on that. And as long as it's authentic to you and you feel like you're being yourself, I think there's a ton of area that is still untapped in the world of social media and thought leadership platforms.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It sounds to me like you're saying it's a very iterative process.
For sure. 100%. Yeah.
That's awesome. That's awesome. And on your channel, is it just you presenting information? Do you do it interview style? How does that actually flow for you?
I did both. I was doing just me, shoot to camera, very edited, you know, lots of sort of graphics and everything. I love that style. I think that's where I get the most amount of views. But I also was doing interview style just like this, cutting those down to probably 20-minute little interviews. And they were doing well too. But I think it's a different kind of audience. You have to kind of learn the algorithms. And YouTube is all about watch time, right? So if you've got a 20-minute interview and your watch time dives after 5 minutes, that hurts your algorithm. And so what I did is I'm now launching a podcast for the interview stuff and keeping that hard-hitting 8 to 10-minute content on the YouTube channel. So that's the plan moving forward.
That's awesome. I love hearing how people think through that. The process is, I think, one of the, you know, people often say, well, I can't get started because they're just too afraid that it's not going to work out. But I guess in the end, you just, you know, these processes are things that they're processes. You just figure it out and keep refining it as you go.
For sure. Consistency is the key with any of this stuff, right? Obviously, you're running a daily podcast. I mean, there's a huge value in that for people. They just know exactly what you're going to be doing. For me, it's a weekly episode on my YouTube channel. And when people have that consistency, they keep tuning in and they keep coming back.
Right. Yeah. And that's the common mistake I've seen is the erratic. You know, it's a very erratic posting schedule. And you're like, wait, I don't know when this is coming out. So people kind of lose interest. So that's fascinating. Let's talk real estate here a little bit more. little less social and a little more real estate. You just talked about a $300 million development project. That's a lot of fun. How did you go? I think it's just fun to say those numbers, to be honest. Yeah. It's like, holy smokes, that's a big project. But how did you go from maybe doing, you know, small deals to now looking at something like this and knowing you have the confidence to take it down?
Yeah, I think it's something that, again, goes back to a bit of that mindset of just going, this transaction is not all that different from the other ones. And I think a lot of people, as they get into real estate investing or investing in general, they think, well, I have to start with the single family dwelling. Then I got to go to the duplex and the triplex and the fourplex and then the sixplex and so on and so forth. They would never think of making that jump from the duplex to the $300 million project. But really, when you boil it down, it just comes down to what is the process of getting from point A to point B, the end product. And you just have to know what that is. You have to put the right people on the bus to be able to get you there. And really all it is, it's just bigger numbers. The process is the same. The transactions are the same. There's more zeros in the transaction, but guess what? There's more zeros in the profit too. And so I think if you're going to put your time and your energy into trying to build a 50 unit portfolio over the next 10 years, why not try to take it down in one transaction? Even if it took you 2 years to do that, you know, you're still ahead of the game and you've still put in the same amount of time and energy. So I think it's just really getting the process down, figuring it out. Once you figure out how to do development in general, doesn't matter whether you're doing 20 units or whether you're doing 500, it's the same process.
I like the simplification of that. If someone, you know, well, here, we'll just talk about me. I've never done any development. I mean, that's intimidating, right? You go, ah, crud, like development ground up. I mean, I've got a small project we're doing right now, but is it really development? Not really, but you're saying it's all the same thing, just more zeros and maybe more labor and materials.
Yeah. And I think that obviously with a ground up development, like if you're talking like taking something that's existing, you know, needs a zoning change, needs to go through site plan control and site draft plan approval and all of that, there's obviously time involved there, right? So you have to factor all of that in. But it's really, it's the same. And when you put the right people in the right places, I mean, I'm not going to go and sit in front of the planning department and try to sell them on a $300 million development. That's not my expertise. I'm going to hire a planner. And so also the bigger the transaction, the more professionals you get involved that really know exactly what they're doing. And you're just quarterbacking the whole thing. I'm not trying to figure out how to build something that's $120 million. That's what the builders do. That's what the planners do. That's what all these people do. And that's their expertise. And in a way, it's sometimes easier because you're forced to hand that over to the people that actually know what they're doing.
Right. So in this potential project, what would be your role?
I would be the developer, really one of the development team. You know, this is not something that I'm going to take on my own. I've got people surrounding me. I've got lawyers. I've got people that raise capital. I've got real estate agents. I've got a lot of people in that circle. And I think that's what's really important is that you know your role and your responsibility. And so I have a certain presence, I think, in our community based on some of the things that I do with my social media. So, you know, my responsibility might be getting the initial word out and being able to kind of talk with some of the people that I have connections with, but it's not going to stop at me. It's going to be then passed on to somebody else who maybe will have those conversations, who's much better at raising capital than I am or doing all the things. And so I think it's a really a lot of fun if you can stay in your world where you are best suited and kind of grow from there.
Yeah, that's really unique. What advice would you give to somebody who is looking or curious about getting into the development world?
I think that you have to look at where there's obviously opportunity. I'm a huge believer in looking at migration patterns of where people want to live, what kind of places they want to live in. You have to kind of be a futurist, right? You have to look at what is that next thing that people want to live in. If you're building something that people want to live in now in 5 years, they may not want that. So a lot of the things that we're looking at now are this possibility of co-living, you know, smaller individual spaces with more common area, things like elevator chutes for Uber Eats and things like that, that wouldn't have existed a little while ago. You know, now you're starting to incorporate that stuff into the buildings and access to transit. There's all of those things. People don't necessarily want cars. Are cars going to be a viable thing in 5 years? We're probably all going to have Uber memberships and things like that where we actually don't need a vehicle. With the technology and the way that it grows exponentially, you have to kind of think of what's coming and design housing around that. And if you can do that, you're going to be hugely successful in that space.
Yeah, that is a bit of a risk, is looking to the future and anticipating that. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you mentioned a few very real life examples. Maybe those are things you guys are considering. But how does someone go about doing that? Like when you plan ahead, how do you do that?
I think it depends on your demographic, right? I think if you're marketing to everybody, you're kind of marketing to no one. So what is your niche? Is it seniors housing? Is it long-term care? Is it student rentals? Is it young families? What's the demographic first? What are they looking for? And then you're designing housing around their needs. And nothing works better than having those conversations with people that would be potential users. What is the thing that's missing in their housing situation right now? And the curve takes a little while to get there, but if flexibility, I think, is the main key right now. Is there flex space? Is there something in the building that could be a gym today, but could be something else tomorrow? Because you know how the trends work. It just, stuff changes so quickly. And today it's, you know, this trend, and tomorrow it could be something else. And so you want to have your buildings designed that way. Even if it's a small, you know, 10 unit development or 12 unit development, what does that look like in a couple of years?
That's an intriguing thought, you know, is building today with the anticipation that it could be repurposed tomorrow. How does one do that? Like, do you mark those spaces off and say, you know, this could be a gym today?
Everything is up in the air right now with the pandemic, because we're just so focused on what's happening in front of us right now. But I think you have to think about things in the perspective of things are probably going to normalize, or they already have started to normalize a little bit right now. Nothing's going to be the same as pre-COVID. I mean, I think the world has changed significantly, but there are going to be things that go back to somewhat of a normalcy that we experienced before the pandemic. So for me, it's looking at those, you know, do we want commercial space, or is it now more of that live workspace? One of our buildings has commercial zoning on the main floor. We chose not to put in any commercial space whatsoever because I think retail is dying a little bit. But what's thriving right now, and I think what will continue to thrive over the next 3 to 5 years, is can somebody live in their unit but have the zoning to allow to operate a small business, something like a hair salon or like that has the zoning and they have the ability to be able to do that. But it's also their 2-bedroom, 2-bathroom, 1,200 square foot condo. So now they don't need a commercial space. They have everything they have in their residential space, but they can operate a business legally out of that space as well. And so I think that's where you have to look at some of those things that are happening and try to get ahead of it.
Yeah, that's really challenging. I mean, I can only imagine, especially in denser urban centers here in the States, that would be a very challenging thing to get through codes or get through permitting or things like that. But what are some ways that when you plan for stuff like that, how do you get around that potential hurdle?
I was a part of a real estate mastermind a couple of weekends ago, and we had a developer, a professor of development, essentially come in and speak to the group. And he's like, you know, you got to start thinking a little bit outside of the box. What does the municipality want to see? I think that's a step that so many people miss, right? Hey, I'm the developer. I want to go in. Here's what I want. I want to 20-story tower. I want this. I want that. Did anyone ever think to ask the municipality what they want and what they need? Because I tell you what, if you ask them what they need and want, hey, we want some low-rise housing with maybe a communal garden or something like that. Well, guess what? When you put that application in front of them, that is exactly what they want. What do you think they're going to do? They're going to fast track it. They're going to approve it, no problem. But if you go in there saying, this is what we want, then it's going to be a completely different process. So I always say to people, start with asking your municipality or, you know, wherever you're looking to develop, what they're interested in seeing. I mean, if it matches your goals and it makes financial sense, then why not produce something like that for them? Because it's going to be a much easier time getting it approved.
That's brilliant advice. That's brilliant advice. Yeah. I mean, again, like you said, if it makes financial sense, then go for it. So, man, that's really cool. I love that. Darren, is there anything else before we jump into the final four questions that you would love to share with our listeners?
No, I think for me, real estate investing is a journey. And I think that a lot of people are looking to get into it and investing in general to get rich quick. And it's never been that for me. It's always been a long-term game. So be patient and, you know, get educated, keep listening to things like podcasts like this. And just the wealth of knowledge I've gained from having these kinds of experiences, even if you just hear one little thing today that you can incorporate in the next little while. It's such a benefit. So hats off to you and being able to create a platform like this where people can come and learn for free. It's such a way to give back. And I think it's commendable for sure.
Oh, well, thank you. I appreciate that. Final four questions are this. If I give you just $20,000 to invest in real estate with no previous real estate investing experience, what would you do with it and why?
Yeah, I think I'd spend a little bit of money on education, not a ton, probably, you know, $1,000, $2,000 in getting the proper education. And then I'd probably start wholesaling. I've never done it. I don't do much of it at all. But I think, you know, when you look at the impact of what it can get you for the amount that you have actually invested in it, to me, it's one of the best strategies. I'm also a big believer in the BRRRR strategy and just recycling capital and doing that over and over again. Those are probably my two favorites. So yeah, I'd do a combination of wholesaling and flipping and BRRRing properties. Yeah.
Yeah. It's funny. The wholesaling answer I've only gotten maybe once or twice. And I'm always shocked by that because it costs so little, like $2,000 to $4,000, man. And you can have all your mailers out. You'll get a bite. You'll get a bite on a line somewhere.
Yeah. It's low risk, right? Like what's the risk in wholesaling? You don't get a buyer. You just back out of the transaction. Like it's.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Interesting. No, that's cool. I love that. Question number two is this. If you could help our listeners avoid just one mistake in real estate, what would it be? And how would you avoid it?
I think I would avoid this mentality that I talked about a little bit earlier of there's a natural progression where I have to grow my business, go from singles to duplexes to 3 to 4 to 5, 6. Doesn't exist in real estate. If you want to start with a 100 unit building as your very first purchase, it's available to you. So take that away, whatever it is you want to do. If your end goal is somewhere, just start there. You might have to start smaller. But if your end goal is to be buying and doing development, then why would you start with a single family dwelling?
Right. Love that. Question number three, when it comes to investing in the world, what's one thing you're doing right now to make the world a better place?
You know, for me, I was talking about this with one of my business partners the other day, and I've always struggled with my why and being able to give back. And I think what I've realized is I'm passionate about rescue animals, specifically dogs. I have a rescue dog. So my next give back is definitely going to be to set up some sort of animal sanctuary. I'm building in Costa Rica right now, and I'd love to go down there, set up a dog rescue sanctuary and be able to provide care and have those dogs adopted. And that's what I'd like to do next.
That's cool. I love that. If our listeners want to get in touch with you, Darren, what is the best way to do that?
info@darrenvoros.com is the easiest way. That's my email, my website, darrenvoros.com, or check out my YouTube channel and send me a DM on Instagram. Either one of those will all work.
That's fantastic. And if you are just listening, that's Darren, D-A-R-R-E-N, Voros, V-O-R-O-S. Darren, thank you so much for your time.
Hey, thanks for having me on. Appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen, if you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much and hope to catch you on the next episode.